Well, great. Thank you, Jade, and good morning, everyone, and welcome to Peyto's first quarter 2013 results conference call. In the room with me today, we have the entire Peyto management team, consisting of Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer, Kathy Turgeon, our CFO. We've got Dave Thomas, our VP Exploration, JB Lachance, our VP Exploitation, and Tim Louie, our VP Land. And, of course, we have Jim Grant, our Investor Awareness Rep, as well. But before we get started today, I want to just send out a great big thank you to all of the Peyto team. We've had another amazing quarter of results, and it's a direct result of their hard work and dedication to creating shareholder value that we've achieved such success. And I truly believe that we have the best technical and operations team in the industry. And, you know, so on behalf of all of our shareholders and the board of directors of Peyto, I want to send out a great big thank you to them. Now, Jim, I see you've got a big long list of questions for us, so why don't we turn it over to you.
Okay. For those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. Darren, in our first quarter 2013 news release, the increase in production over this time last year seems the most impressive item to me. What are your thoughts on our overall Q1 results, and what do you think is the most important message in this release for our investors?
Yeah, Jim, our increase in production, I think, is definitely impressive. 35%, I think, will likely be one of the largest increases by any Canadian producer this quarter. And, you know, probably more importantly for shareholders, the 26% per share growth is also a pretty big number. I was canvassing a lot of the other releases that we've seen, and the only other number that I saw that was big was Tourmaline with 27% per share growth. So, you know, I think we're definitely putting up some very big numbers, and those are impressive. But, you know, perhaps, you know, more important than the absolute size of the increase in production is that this growth that we've put up is profitable growth, because really that's what the Peyto strategy is all about. You know, making a profit on the capital that we put to work for shareholders. So, you know, I think the most important message for investors with our Q1 results is that we're continuing to profitably grow our business. And, you know, it's at a time right now in the industry when most of our competitors are very challenged to do just that. And I think that it's that profitable growth that's really setting Peyto apart and, you know, in a lot of ways shows how unique our company really is.
Okay. And turning to our VP of Exploitation, JP Lachance. JP, we noted in our release that the majority of our first quarter activity was on wells in the Spirit River Group because of favorable economic returns. Can you expand on that and provide some context on how that fits with current gas price forecasts and our plans for the remaining well mix this year?
Yes, Jim, of the 31 wells we drilled in Q1, the largest portion did target the Wilrich, the Flare, and the Notikewin formations. Since 2009, Peyto's drilled 93 Wilrich horizontals, 38 Flare horizontals, and 40 Notikewin horizontals. Now, that experience allows us to continue to improve our drilling and completion practices, allowing for greater efficiencies and continued cost reduction. Despite the fact that these formations have less liquids than, say, the Cardium, they're predictable, higher gas production profiles, coupled with our continued focus on cost reduction, allow us for good returns. And gas prices having come up from this time last year, despite being flatter in the out years, provides us with estimated half-cycle returns of greater than 35% on these Spirit River projects. But that's not to say that our Cardium wells are the poor cousins. They too have good returns at close to 30%, and we plan to dedicate a rig or two to the drilling of them for the balance of the year. And as mentioned in the press release, we now have 6 horizontal Blue Sky wells under our belt. As with the Spirit River wells, we continue to improve efficiencies and reduce costs with that increased activity in the Blue Sky. Half-cycle returns in the Blue Sky are also very attractive at greater than 40% at today's costs and strip prices. So for the balance of the year, we plan to drill a similar mix to that of the first quarter.
Okay. Turning to Scott Robinson, our COO and VP of Operations. Scott, while our natural gas production was up 35% in the first quarter year over year, our liquids production was up 42%. Is this a result of starting up our first deep cut facility at the Sundance Old Man plant in Q1? How are things going at that plant? Is it fully up to speed yet? And just how much of our overall production is benefiting from it?
Well, lots of questions there, Jim. Let's see if we can attack that. Based on the percentages you cited, we have seen a disproportionate increase in liquid as compared to gas year over year. If we put it another way, we see that our liquid ratio has moved from about 18.6 barrels per million up to 19.6 over that time period that you cited, from Q1 of 12 to Q1 of 13. That increase is both the result of early 2012 focus on liquids-rich formations. Back when gas price was going downhill at this time last year, we tilted our focus towards the liquids-rich component, and part of that increase is from that, and part of it is, as you cited, from the deep cut plant. To provide a more complete understanding of the deep cut, we need to keep in mind that only part of Q1 experienced the benefits of that plant. It was only operational for part of the quarter, and we were optimizing it over that course of that quarter, with most of that optimization spilling over from March and into April here. There were a couple of prolonged Trans-Canada sales line outages that kind of interfered with our ability to move that deep cut to the full capability that it's capable of. If we look at our corporate numbers for the past week here, we're making about 61,000 barrels a day with a liquid ratio that's up even further. So the quarter liquid ratio was 19.6. We're up to about 20.4 based on the deep cut running at its full capacity now. If we look specifically at that deep cut, the 90 million cubic feet of gas that we're putting through net to us, that we're putting through our Old Man facility, is giving us 36 barrels per million. And that compares to a pre-deep cut level for that same amount of gas going through Old Man of 23 barrels per million. So we've gained about 13 barrels per million for our 90 million cubic feet going through Old Man. That's giving us about 1,000 barrels a day, and that's right about bang on what the technical design work had us doing from that plant. So we're very pleased with the plant, and yes, it is playing a role in helping increase our liquid mix on our production.
Okay. Turning to Kathy Turgeon, our CFO and VP of Finance, despite an increase in net debt in Q1 2013 over the same quarter last year, our interest costs on a per MCF basis have come down. As well, we just announced a significant change to our credit facilities. How do our longer-term notes and our new unsecured revolving credit facility provide for ongoing evolution of our debt financing?
Well, in 2012, we did do our first and second issuance of notes when we issued our $150 million in senior secured notes. This was part of our strategy to diversify our debt structure and better manage our exposure to future interest rate increases. The diversification did not increase our debt servicing costs significantly, as you can see from our interest costs on a per MCFV basis. The security on these notes was released at the same time as the new unsecured covenant-based credit facility with our bank syndicate was signed. And so Peyto is now in a position to look for further opportunities in the long-term fixed-rate markets, which will allow us to better match the long-life nature of our assets with our debt structure and to manage the risk of interest rate increases over the next 5 to 10 years while continuing to maintain our low cost of short-term debt service.
Okay. Darren, we've announced an increase in dividend. It's our first since becoming a corporation. How does this fit in with our overall strategy for organic growth?
You know, Jim, I think that the dividend increase comes at the appropriate time. You know, we've seen substantial growth in our business over the last couple of years, especially since we came out as a dividend-paying corp and set the current 6 cents per share per month rate. You know, over the last 2 years, we've seen production grow from 30,000 barrels a day to 60,000 barrels a day. Reserves are up from 1.6 TCF to 2.4 TCF. Even our funds from operations are up from around $60 million a quarter to $100 million a quarter. So, you know, all of those increases really have driven an increase in our earnings or our profits, and arguably that's where the dividends come from, or at least that's where they're supposed to come from anyway. So, you know, I think it's about time that the shareholders see a tangible effect of all of that growth. You know, there are still probably those that would argue that, you know, should we be putting that incremental capital dollar to work in the ground? But You know, really, I think the pace at which we're currently investing capital is pretty close to, you know, as much as we can get done this year. We've got a big capital program for this year, the largest ever in the company's history. You know, the commodity price that we're looking at today, we're looking to be generating close to free cash flow by the end of the year. So I think the dividend increase makes good sense. With our hedge book right now, we've protected a lot of the downside of natural gas prices. If we were to see a soft gas price through the summer, as Kathy just talked about, our borrowing capacity and our balance sheet is really in good shape. And I think we're pretty confident on the outlook for the rest of this year and into 2014. You know, I think this dividend increase is just another logical result from our total return model, really. And I guess it shouldn't really come as a surprise to shareholders, I don't think. You know, the growth in our asset base, the growth in the scale and speed of our capital programs, and the growth in our profits and dividends. That's the Peyto strategy.
Okay. Turning to Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration. Dave, in the 2013 first quarter results news release, we discuss significant unbooked drilling inventory, specifically in the Falher, that can be continue to be proven up. Can you speak about the booked and unbooked drilling inventory in all the horizons we're interested in and how those drilling locations are evolving?
Jim, our booked versus unbooked drilling locations simply refer to the number of new drilling locations which Peyto's independent reserves auditors have classified as proven undeveloped or proven additional versus our own internal assessment of all potential undrilled locations. The proven undeveloped drill locations will usually need to be bound on three sides by proven producing wells in the adjoining sections of land. And the proven additional locations have less stringent criteria, but usually require at least one proven producing well in an adjoining section. So we generically refer to these locations as booked to point out that they've been assessed by an independent engineering firm and that they're likely to be a conservative estimate of the potential number of Peyto's remaining undrilled drilling locations. So at year-end of 2012, our independent reserves auditors had identified 488 of these remaining horizontal drilling locations, which we collectively classify as booked new locations. Peyto, of course, has geologically and geophysically mapped the extent of our target reservoir sands on the lands we currently own, and we can identify horizontal drilling opportunities farther out, often considerably more than 1 mile from existing proven producing wells. So in addition to Peyto's more conservative 488 booked remaining horizontal drilling locations, Peyto can also see an incremental 800 to 1,100 additional horizontal drilling locations on our lands. So Peyto usually maps the thickness of our net gas pay using a minimum 6% density porosity cutoff. We also use a computer mapping software application called Petra to digitally calculate what is called Phi-H, which accounts for both porosity and thickness. We then use our Phi-H maps to estimate the volumetrics and gas in place for each section of our land. And we recently just finished up an internal assessment of the resource potential for each of our seven main drilling target sands, the Cardium, Notikewin, Upper Falher, Middle Falher, Wilrich, Blue Sky, and Cadiman zones in what we call the Greater Sundance area. Our recent estimates for just Greater Sundance alone support a total of 1,590 remaining horizontal drilling locations, consisting of about 733 horizontal locations in our higher deliverability Notikewin, Falher, Wilrich, and Blue Sky zones, and 857 drilling locations in our lower deliverability Cardium and Cadman zones. So these estimates, which are based on the Phi-H mapping, support and actually considerably exceed our earlier drill inventory estimates based only on the net pay mapping. The estimates also assume, however, perfect well spacing, which isn't often possible in the real world. However, being mindful of this, we will, over the next few months, be completing the Phi-H mapping in our northern areas and step-out areas to the south of Sundance. So at that time, probably in the fall, we'll have new inventory totals to roll out at that point. So what we see is that Peyto has a very large inventory of horizontal drilling opportunities, and the number of drilling opportunities continues to grow as we better understand our assets. This is an evolving process. For instance, very recently, we just had a new independent petrophysical evaluation of our Notikewin and Falher and Wilrich reservoirs, which we are underestimating. It shows that we are underestimating the porosity in these sands using a straight conservative 6% density cutoff. Now, of course, we're steadily adding new lands with the new inventory on these lands. We drilled our first horizontal well into the Wilrich back in 2009, and since the start of 2009, we've drilled over 220 horizontal wells, but we've also added 248 new net sections of land to our land base. That's accounting for expiries, and it's inclusive of the Open Range acquisition.
Dave, if I could just add to that, I think we had a question sent in regarding our bookings on horizontal wells. And this petrophysical work you speak of, combined with our internal mapping of the resource and the ongoing production performance of our current wells, you should translate into either greater existing horizontal well assignments and or more booked locations to answer that question. Either way, it grows our reserve base.
To wrap up, Jim, although we've recently been highlighting our Falher opportunities, we're actually sitting in a pretty comfortable position right now across the full range of our horizontal drilling inventory.
Thank you. JP, we stated in our news release that when breakup is over, we're going to resume drilling with 10 rigs. That's one more rig than we spoke of pre-breakup. Is this changing our goal for number of wells drilled in 2013? What impacts is this going to have over the rest of the year?
Jim, for the most of the first quarter, we had 9 rigs running and added one more rig just before breakup to end with 10. We spud 31 new wells during that period. And as you mentioned, we plan to come out of the gate with 10 rigs running to take advantage of lower summer costs and to load up our newly expanded facilities that should be ready by late summer, early fall. The upper end of our $500 million budget contemplated a total of 100 gross wells for the year, leaving about 70 more for the balance of the year. Now, because of our efficiencies, we need to drop one or two of those 10 rigs later in the year to stay within that guidance. However, if we did carry on with 10 rigs right through to December, we'd drill about 10 additional wells, depending on the species, beyond our planned 100. And if the business environment is right and the Peyto team can continue to execute a program of this size for an extended period while maintaining the same efficiency and prowess as demonstrated in the past, then we'll leave ourselves that option.
Okay. So, Scott, can you give us an update on where our current production stands?
Sure, I'll try to do that. We are at, as our press release indicated, we're about 61,000 barrels or a little over that right now. We've held above 60,000 for the last 3 weeks, which is quite an accomplishment. We're in a breakup, and we're not adding new wells. We're able to take advantage of some excess deliverability from some of the wells that we brought on just prior to breakup. One thing I want to point out, as we mentioned in our press release, one of the fairly significant accomplishments of the first quarter was this long gathering line that we built from lands we hold in the Ansel area up to our Swanson gas plant. We took that gas plant from just over 10 million a day up to its capacity of 30 million. So we've added 20 million just through that expansion. And furthermore, we've created a corridor that's going to set us up for further development in the year. So that was a fairly major accomplishment and is contributing to that bump in production from our quarter average of 55,000 up to our current of 61,000. So yeah, that's where we stand right now, John.
Okay. And you started talking there about the Swanson plant. Can you speak to our infrastructure plans in light of our production goals? Where are we at with our various projects? And what are our priorities as we look past the 2013 spring breakup for our infrastructure?
Yeah, looking at the upcoming end to the breakup, as JP indicated, we've got 10 rigs planned, and we're going to be ready to rumble as soon as we can get going there. The projects, or the key projects that we have outlined in our press release that we have in mind, are adjacent to our Old Man facility, which is 120 million cubic feet a day facility. We're going to build a new standalone refrigeration plant. It'll do, as designed, it'll do 40 million, but it'll have modular expansion capability up to 80 million for the next couple of years. We're going to equip it with 30 million of compression initially, so that's That's where we'll start. So we'll be ready to accept and address Falher development in and around the core of Sundance with this 30 million or 5,000 BOE a day facility that should be coming on in early fall. At Swanson, I mentioned that we filled that guy up with this new strategic pipeline, and we're going to double that one up with another 30 million of capacity. Again, time for the fall. The processing capacity will be 30 million. We're going to initially add 16 million of compression. So that's 2,000 to 3,000 barrels a day of incremental capability there to accept a bunch of drilling that we have planned in that corridor. And then lastly, we're going to build this new facility in a new area, a smaller facility of about 20 million capacity, but again, expandable through future successes. And that one we'll be able to talk about more in our next quarterly release. So all total, we're adding about 10,000 to 15,000 barrels a day of processing capacity over the course of the balance of this year, which will set us up not only to meet our year-end objectives of 66, 67,000 or whatever that ends up being, but beyond that to continue growth through to the next breakout.
Okay. Turning to Tim Louie, our VP of Land. Tim, in Darren's latest President's Report, he speaks to expiring land rights in the Deep Basin. What opportunities exist for us in our neighbors' upcoming lease expiries? Do we have any plans for this?
Jim, all oil and gas companies are faced with some form of land expiry. If expiries are poorly managed, opportunities can be created to acquire a company's interest by means of a purchase or a farm-in. And we're always searching our core areas for expiries. Our preference is typically the purchase route, as this eliminates any royalty that would be associated with a farm-in. However, some companies are reluctant to sell their interest for cash. In this case, a firm well commitment is required. All our competitors have the ability to conduct farm-ins. We're not unique in this case. What sets Peyto apart from our competitors, however, is our low operating costs. Because of our cost structure, we have the ability to offer better deal terms when warranted in order to secure a deal. Deal terms that are positive, that yield a positive return to Peyto, may be uneconomic to our competitors. And over the past year, we've both purchased and farmed in on expiring acreage. Sometimes companies are reluctant to dispose of their expiring acreage. They just let the lands expire. So we're constantly searching our core areas for rights that have expired and then posting these available rights as soon as possible in the configuration that Peyto desires. And Peyto tries to dictate the posting of open rights as opposed to chasing a competitor's postings. We try to be leaders as opposed to followers. And here's an interesting statistic to back up that statement. In 2012, out of the 72 sections that we acquired at Crown Sales, 80% of these sections were acquired from postings that Peyto had submitted. And with respect to our 2012 Crown Sale acquisitions, that percentage is down slightly but not much. Roughly 75% of our Crown Sale acquisitions came from postings that Peyto submitted. With respect to opportunities on expiring land rights, a new opportunity will present itself beginning in 2014, and that's in the form of shallow rights reversion. On April 16th of this year, Alberta Energy issued an information letter updating its position on shallow rights reversion. The information letter states that Alberta Energy is placing an indefinite hold on serving shallow rights reversion notices for PNG agreements issued prior to January 1st, 2009. However, the information letter goes on to state that this decision does not affect petroleum natural gas agreements issued after January 1st, 2009. So these agreements still remain subject to shallow rights reversion upon expiry beginning in 2014. So one of the reasons the Deep Basin is attractive to so many oil and gas companies is because of the multiple horizons both within the Cretaceous and below. Since our inception, we focused only on Cretaceous targets. However, the Deep Basin has attracted other players chasing deeper targets, such as the Nickanasin, Montney, and Duvernay. We've encountered situations where a deep player will reject a purchase or farm-in offer for the shallow rights because these rights are continued by their deeper production. So with the continued implementation of shallow rights reversion, at least for agreements issued after January 1st, 2009, Cretaceous rights that were previously held by deeper production will slowly start to become accessible. So we'll be reviewing our core areas to identify those agreements subject to this reversion and trying to capitalize on these opportunities with farm-ins or purchases.
Okay. So, Darren, investor sentiment seems optimistic right now. The spot and near-term future prices have for natural gas are much higher than this time last year. And we're starting to hear rumors of increased natural gas activity in the Deep Basin coming in the fall. What is your outlook on how this affects us going forward? How are we preparing for the future?
Well, Jim, yeah, obviously natural gas prices are much better today than this time last year. We even have a mark-to-market loss in our quarterly release there. We haven't had one of those for quite a while. And obviously those higher natural gas prices drive higher netbacks, higher funds from operations, more capital that we can use to fund our capital programs, higher earnings for higher dividends. But it's interesting to see the industry's reaction, both how it's reacted over the last 6 months and maybe how it's looking to react over the next 6 months. So far, we haven't seen these higher prices drive much industry response. We are in breakup for Canadian producers, so it's kind of hard to gauge that. But, you know, I don't think we expect to see a lot of pickup in activity in the summer. There haven't been any big announcements about people increasing their capital programs, putting increased cash flow to work, especially on gas assets. We have heard a few rumors about some of the big foreign capital pools coming back to work in Western Canada in on gas. But, that kind of activity, I think we probably would more expect to see in the fall or even into next winter. It's likely going to happen on more northerly lands that perhaps need, freeze up to access some of those softer muskeg-type areas in northern BC and northern Alberta. So, I think our plan with the 10 rigs coming out of the gate here, as JP and Scott talked about, is a smart one. I think it's planned to be as aggressive as we can possibly be through this summer, get as much done as we can earlier in the year, before maybe there is some of this uptick in activity. I think it's a good plan, too, because it allows us to test perhaps a pace of capital spending that we've never tried before. 10 rigs, as JP alluded to, we'd be at a burn rate that's close to maybe $550 or $600 million annually. So, if we can successfully do that, then that gives us a taste of perhaps an even larger capital program for next year. I still don't think, though, from all the analysis I've read, that 350 AECO is really enough to drive any big change in activity in Western Canada on gas. I still think the threshold price in Canada has got to be closer to $4.50 or $5. For us, though, obviously, this $3.50 price is right in a sweet spot for us. We turn that price into close to $5 of revenue. We net that down to about a $4 netback, close to $24 a BOE. And since we're replacing reserves for half of that cost, we've got a 2-to-1 recycle ratio that we're driving, which is obviously giving us great returns and profitability. And all of that just translates into the fact that we can profitably grow our business, do it very aggressively, and do it without a lot of competition in the industry that would drive up costs. So, like I said earlier, this is a real economic sweet spot for us, and I hope it continues through all of 2013 and into 2014.
Okay. We'd had a number of questions emailed in overnight, and I think we've addressed all of those. So, Jade, I'd like to turn the call over to questions from investors and investment professionals.
We have a question from Robert Zielinski from Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, everyone, and congrats on the great quarter. The cost to build new production seemed to be slightly higher this quarter. Was that driven by spending on new wells or facilities? And can you give us an idea of what you expect to spend on pipeline and facilities for the remainder of the year?
Robert, this is Scott Robinson. I'll address part of that. The optics of our cost to add production may look slightly higher. One thing to note, that we've got about 6 or 7 wells on the sidelines waiting to be finished after breakup at an estimated 5,000 barrels a day. So if you were to factor those in, had they been brought to completion, because a lot of the capital that we spent did relate, or some of the capital we spent did relate to those wells, I think you'd find that number falls right in line with our performance. Certainly, if we look at the performance of the wells on a well-to-well basis, we haven't seen any deterioration, so that bodes well for reproducibility and consistency. And in fact, on the cost side, just reviewing our drilling costs for the first quarter, we're seeing actually some improvement to see if we can sustain it. So we're seeing the exact opposite. The costs are coming down. And I think the biggest thing that you're noting, though, is the fact that we've got some production on the sidelines that has to be finished up here after breakup. JP, you may want to add to that.
I think traditionally we've just not had that kind of amount of production sitting on the sidelines, and so that metric year over year is probably...
The second part of that question, I think, Robert, would relate it to the facility work that we've got coming up. And, you know, we've got, obviously, a bunch of gear on order for these two plants, the Swanson expansion, the Old Man North plant, and even the new area plant that's coming later in the year. I don't think we've got as much sort of big pipeline work plans for the back part of this year. That one big line that we laid from Ansel all the way up to Swanson was obviously a big piece of infrastructure that's going to now serve us for a lot of volume and a lot of development going forward too. So, I think that as much as that 18,900 is a little higher than our sort of 17,500 perhaps that we've been posting in some previous quarters, I don't think directionally it means anything yet. You know, I think from what we're seeing from all the costs and the results we're getting, we should still be at effectively the same capital efficiencies that we've been running at for the last few years.
Great, that's helpful. Thank you.
You bet.
The next question is from Kevin Kayser from Hedgeye Risk Management. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. A couple of modeling questions first. In the release, it says that capital investment was $169 million in the quarter, but only $132 ran through the cash flow statement. Just help me reconcile those two numbers.
This is Kathy Turgeon. The difference in that is the change in non-cash working capital. So on the cash flow, it's really looking at actual cash outflows when you take into consideration receivables and payables and that, whereas the $169 million would be the total spent, not looking at just cash inflows and outflows.
Okay.
I mean, really... Sorry, Kevin, just to elaborate further, you know, this 10-rig pace that we're getting up to, obviously that's a lot of capital spending each and every month. So, you know, the timing of getting those bills paid, so to speak, and having that money flow through our accounting, there's just going to be a little bit of a larger gap there, but that's sort of a continuous thing if we're at this rate of spending.
Next question on G&A. We have close to $500,000 in the quarter. That's down from like a run rate of more like $1 million last year. And just how are you able to do this despite growing the business sort of at this level?
Everybody works here, 25 hours a day, so we managed to get a lot more out of all of our staff. No, I'm kidding. You know, I think the net G&A amount really is affected by the size of the capital program. You know, there is overhead recoveries for capital dollars spent, and so the larger the capital program that we can deploy with the smaller team, the lower the G&A is going to be. We're obviously demonstrating that, with the same, effectively the same size team that we had back in 2009, barring a few people that we've added, where we had a $73 million capital program, we're deploying a capital program that's going to be $500 million. So, that's the big change. If you look at the overhead recovery piece and take that out, then obviously you get a sense of what the, if we were doing nothing, what would the G&A look like?
There is an analysis in the MD&A that shows the G&A before and after overhead recoveries. So before overhead recoveries, you can see that our G&A quarter over quarter is actually a little bit higher just due to adding a few more people.
Okay, and then so current production just around 61,000 BOEs a day. You've got 5,000 BOEs a day behind pipe. The last time you gave guidance was for an exit rate of 62,000 to 67,000. Now maybe we get some decline over the next month or so just during breakup, but that exit rate is looking a little light to me at this point. What are your thoughts where you're looking on the exit rate? And would you say production's running on schedule, like ahead of schedule, behind, and what is driving that?
I think it really is on schedule. I don't know that we're really too much ahead of schedule. We were hoping to be at this point, I think, for breakup. We were actually hoping, I think, to come into the year a little stronger, in fact, but we had some issues, obviously, at our Old Man plant we've talked about in the past. The guidance for the year, gave us a little bit of wiggle room on the capital, 450 to 500 million. Right now, the program obviously is gearing towards more of that $500 million level. And so, we would be targeting the upper end of the exit volume guidance as well. Originally, our budget did include probably more facility spending, getting the Nose Hill Cheap Cut in place sooner in the year. If we push that back a little bit and use those dollars to drill wells instead, we probably do see a little better production response. Arguably, you know, if we could drill four wells with $20 million, then the productivity is probably higher than the 1,000 BOEs a day we get out of a cheap cut. But that's only initially, you know, the 1,000 BOEs a day. A cheap cut doesn't decline, but the four wells do. So, you know, I think towards the end of the year, maybe we do get to a point where we could exceed the production guidance. But, you know, coming into the year, there were still a lot of unknowns on gas prices, industry activity levels. We had to obviously leave ourselves a little room to be dynamic and to be responsive to the industry conditions. I think I'd say at this point, industry conditions look good. They're looking more and more constructive for us. And, you know, we've got decent gas prices. We managed to layer in some more better hedges that support that summer price. You know, our 10 rigs are running efficiently, and we're banging out wells as efficiently as we thought we could. So, barring any delays in facilities or something unforeseen coming down the pipe here, you know, I think we're pretty optimistic about where the budget and the forecast for this year is going to go.
And the press release noted that you drilled two Wilrich wells in a new area. Can you kind of comment on those results and then what sort of the overall plans in that new area are, you know, what you're targeting in terms of an acreage position? And is that where the new smaller plant, the 20 million a day plant, is going to go?
That is where the plant is planned to go. You know, we don't really have a lot of material results to talk about to date. You know, we have been building a land position. We have got a couple wells down and completed. But, you know, really that, in our view, you know, to announce a bunch of test rates or something can really be quite misleading. And to be perfectly honest, we've still got some land deals and some ideas in the area, and you know, we'd still like to pursue some of those. So, and we don't have any productive curves to show you. You know, we're not in a position yet to be able to tell you what kind of returns we can generate on the wells that could be drilled in those areas. We're optimistic, of course. That's why we're spending attention and time and capital there. But you know, without any tangibles that we can show you, I think there isn't anything material to tell you yet. But we are trying to keep you abreast of the fact that we are looking at new areas. We're not just focused on the core Greater Sundance area. Or, you know, we're constantly looking up and down the trends in the Deep Basin for new areas and new opportunities. That's nothing new for Peyto, of course, and we've always been doing that, and you know, we're going to keep doing that.
Fair enough. And then last one for me, on the decision to increase the dividend, did you think about using that, you know, incremental $36 million a year about that and consider buying back stock? And also, you know, I thought the increase was just a little bit surprising in light of the equity raise, which was, you know, only 6 months ago.
You're right. I mean, the debate that we have at the board table, competition for capital, is always a good one. What's great is we have lots of cash that we get to debate about using and how do we use that most effectively. You know, I think when we look, you know, across our business, we looked at our funding, we looked at our budget for this year and how we look going into next year. We looked at where commodity prices were. We looked at how fast our cash flow is growing. You know, where does our borrowing capacity sit? How's the stock performing in the market? All those things, we felt that as a collectively that, you know, it's probably about time that we start to address the dividend. And the fact that we've seen a lot of growth, we've been aggressively deploying capital. Can we deploy more? Possibly. A little bit more, I think. I think there's reason to expect that we can grow our capital programs a little bit more. Probably not by the same rate that we've been growing them over the last couple of years. You know, we were really aggressively increasing capital programs, but I think we're getting closer anyway to our top end of capital deployment. And we're a little bit cautious, too, about industry activity picking up a bit. You know, I think all those things considered, we thought that, you know, it's about time we start to touch the dividend. But, you know, we are very confident in our ability to continue to grow cash flow and to increase the amount of cash that we're generating. And with that cash, we're going to have good competition for it between returns to shareholders, increasing capital programs. You know, the debt is not a big concern for us. Obviously, our balance sheet's in great shape. Our debt to cash flows are going to look to continue to drop as we move forward because we're growing cash faster than we're growing debt. Even if we are using some debt, I think we're using it effectively. The cost of the debt's quite attractive and getting more so with an unsecured facility that now we can look at more term debt at very low cost. So it's a great debate. There's no question. And individual shareholders always have individual positions. Do they want more yield? Do they want more growth? Everybody has an opinion. I think we're trying obviously to be very prudent with use of the cash and consider all opinions and all positions and maximize the total return that we can generate for shareholders with all the forms that we're using to generate it.
Great, thanks. Another great quarter.
Congrats. Great, thanks, Kevin, for the questions.
There are no further questions registered at this time. I would like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. G.
Okay, well, thanks again for listening in. It is a busy week of releases, but, we're pretty excited about the results we've just posted, and we're not sitting around here waiting for breakup to be over. We're busy planning and getting ready for a very exciting period coming up. We've got, as we talked about, the largest capital program in our history at work this year, and so we're working hard to make sure it's deployed as efficiently as possible and generating the maximum returns for shareholders. So it's going to be an exciting year. We'll look to report on the second quarter here in August. So we'll talk to you then.